On today's episode, we've got a blast from the past on Make the Dough Rise. We have a return appearance of my daughter, Hannah, after a three-year hiatus. She's going to come back and tell us everything that she's learned about finance and what kids need to know before they go to college.
It's time to Make the Dough Rise, the financial podcast with Brian Dough.
Yes, another special edition of Make the Dough Rise here. Walter Storholt alongside Brian Dough, daughter Hannah along as well, as he teased moments ago. And not only is it fun to have Hannah back, but, you know, she kind of joined us, well, not quite a milestone episode. Her appearance prior was on episode 49. 3 years ago, so we should have planned that better and had her on episode 50 if we had known she'd be back for episode 100. So that's the other big milestone of today's show, Brian. Congratulations to you, my friend, on 100 podcasts. That's pretty awesome.
I can't believe it's been 100 episodes, and yeah, hopefully Hannah can make it back before another 51 go by.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, we'll try. Maybe we can make this a every 20 episode check-in or something like that, perhaps. But this is going to be fun as Hannah makes the transition into college, and we get additional lessons picked up from the last couple of years. And I think this will be fun to kind of revisit some of those conversations and other things that have popped up over the past couple of years, Brian. So I'm looking forward to having you guys back on here and getting to learn a little bit about what the last couple of years have been like with learning in the financial realm and money and finance and all that good stuff. Hannah, congrats to you on finishing up your high school years and getting ready for this college transition. They're very exciting.
Thank you. It doesn't feel like just a few months ago I graduated and now I'm in college and moving out and kind of realizing how important personal finance is to understand and manage by yourself and not just have your financial advisor dad kind of manage it all for you.
Doing it all for you. Yeah. So you're learning today, that lesson a lot earlier than other folks do, I think.
Today, Walter, we are going to find out if I have succeeded both as a father yes. and as a financial advisor, I'm afraid.
Yes. Hannah, before we dive into all that finance stuff, tell us what is next and in store for you. Where are you going to college? And do you have majors picked out yet? Or does that come a little bit later on? Just give us the skinny on that.
Yeah, so right now I'm at the University of North Georgia, a little satellite campus in Athens, or I guess it's in Watkinsville. And the plan is to transfer into UGA. And then right now my major is business administration. But right now I've heard that's kind of the what else is out there major. And I'm thinking right now I kind of want to go into psychology a little more. And I really like working with kids. So I think being like a child psychologist or something in that realm,
yeah.
Just helping kids.
Yeah, Hannah's had a lot of success. She's been teaching, she got her blue belt in jujitsu, and now she is actually teaching the kids class or helping teach the kids class and is really enjoying that. And so kind of sees where the teaching and the psychology and all that comes together and really seems to have a passion for it. So it's good.
How
it's good
cool
to see
is that. Good, great to just have a direction. You know, even if that's not where the ultimate finish line is for where you go, just the direction will be so cool. So that is awesome. Well, I'll turn it over to you, Brian, and you let us know what direction you want to take this in. Do you want to start with the news, I guess, before we get into the Hannah stuff? Because there was something that popped up over the last couple of weeks and since our last episode that I think had a lot of people a bit nervous and worried. Now, some of these details are still a bit fuzzy and waiting for official word on a lot of this, but you probably saw on the news reports that many people's Social Security numbers were pretty much hacked or stolen or revealed, and we don't know the intentions of the folks who have done this quite yet and how this is all going to transpire, but it brings up some interesting questions as how to react as a saver or investor or just an everyday American. And have you been getting any calls of concern from folks about that, Brian?
Yeah, so I saw that, and I actually had a whole stack of news items that I wanted to go over, but it was so long that it's actually going to be a whole next episode of a podcast.
Okay,
but I did want to touch on this one because from what I see, Social Security numbers have been hacked by somebody that may be trying to get a ransom for them. I don't know if they've really been released or they're being sold on the dark web or anything like that. But two things. If your social security number is out there and it's could be accessed and used to commit identity theft or take out loans in your name or things like that's a little bit scary. But by the same token, if you've got hundreds of millions of Social Security numbers available, there's not enough hackers and criminals to exploit all of those at any one time. It's kind of like credit card numbers on the dark web. I think I saw somewhere where the price of those had really plummeted because there's really only so much credit card fraud that can be committed relative to the number of cards out there and that have been hacked and stolen. But I don't want to be complacent or dismissive about it. So if you have a concern about it, at a minimum, sign up for a credit monitoring system. And honestly, I personally use Credit Sesame. It's free. They do, you know, send you some ads that pop up, and I think credit cards are their promotional model and revenue model. But it is a free service that'll give you very up-to-date alerts if there's any kind of activity on your credit monitoring. You can keep up with when accounts are opened or closed, when inquiries happen. And it gives you your credit score, usage, balances. It's amazing what amount of information is actually out there. And it's, again, it's a free one to sign up for. So that would be a minimal step. The next step would be to actually call the credit agencies, freeze your credit cards or freeze your accounts. And you know, the downside to that is if you do go buy a car or you're trying to get a mortgage or anything like that, you would have to unfreeze the credit before you could get things processed. But it would, if you don't have any intention of using it or monitoring it, that's a definitely good, safe way to at least make sure somebody else isn't.
Yeah, might take a little bit extra work to go that step, and can be a little bit more of an involved process versus just the monitoring, but something that I think folks who are truly worried about it can definitely take that step. I know a few folks who do the on-off credit freeze and go through that hassle just because of their level of comfort with having that access open and the worries about identity theft. So yeah, depending on your comfort level, monitoring or freezing could be the right choice for you. So kind of interesting to think about that a little bit. All right, well, next episode, we'll get into more news headlines and reaction to those items, since you said you got a full page, full list for us, Brian. But yeah, let's get back into kind of lessons learned in the financial realm over the last couple of years from Hannah. And what jumps out to you most, Brian, for where you want to take this?
Well, it was interesting because as we went along, we have talked about stocks, investing, saving, managing a checkbook, doing a budget, And really all of this centered around preparing for college, because that is a great opportunity to introduce finance, budgeting, multiple years of expenditures, tallying up what that total is going to cost, whether you're going to get scholarships or here in Georgia, we have the HOPE program, which is funded by the lottery. And so if you keep your grades up, that covers a lot of the tuition. So you've got a lot of variables, and to me, it was a good opportunity to show how you could set a long-term goal, figure out, you know, roughly what you might need. So you can figure out both, you know, at a high end, if you know, were not to get scholarships or you lost the HOPE scholarship, or if you did get a lot of scholarships and had money left over, what's that range? And just getting a handle on all those, but all those items in advance so that you're properly set up when you head out. Well, the observation that Hannah made along the way was that a lot of her friends, their parents maybe had money set aside for them, or they had savings, or grandparents were paying for things, but they were never included in the information about it. They weren't being taught anything about the whole process. So I'm going to let Hannah talk about that for just a minute.
Yes, I have a close friend, and they have something similar to what I have with a stock portfolio that's been developing over years to save for college. And you just kind of get set up early, because that's, of course, the key to stocks is start early. And you've always done a good job at keeping me in the loop of exactly what was going in, what was going out, what stocks were being traded, how the market was looking. Even though I didn't understand it, you still made a point of sharing everything with me. The friend I have, I guess we got talking about it one time, and I said, oh yeah, I'm fairly in the loop a little bit, or my dad likes to keep me in the loop with how the market's going. And then my friend said, I don't know anything about that, because my parents don't want me to know anything about what I've got going on in my stock portfolio or my account. And I felt very fortunate to have such an awesome dad to teach me about this and, you know, have me educated on finance.
I think I may have to pay for that little comment there.
Yeah,
slide some money under the table here.
That's right. That's right. Yes. Do we need a sponsorship disclaimer at the beginning of the episode?
Not sponsored. Sponsored.
That's interesting to hear, though. Like, why? I wonder if this, you know, this person's, you know, the guidance that they're getting is maybe there's a reason for wanting to keep them in the dark. I mean, could you see that side of the perspective? I mean, it feels like knowledge is power in that regard, and probably goes counter to what you believe in, Brian, of trying to, you know, expose your daughters to different things that are going on in the financial world and helping them understand what's happening in portfolios. But at the same time, right, when we're young, we're not really supposed to pay attention to the ups and downs of the markets, right? So maybe that's their way of teaching that. I don't know.
I think there's a taboo around money. I think there's some people that in of a different generation, and I certainly see this with some of my older clients, money and, you know, probably religion and politics, and there's a whole list of topics that were sort of taboo and you just
basically
didn't talk
any
about.
Conversation's taboo today. But yeah, go ahead.
Pretty much, yeah. And I think we get in trouble with potentially anything today.
Yes.
So I think there's just sort of a hesitancy to you know, maybe people, if they think their children know how much money's there, they're somehow going to, I don't know, envision buying some, you know, elaborate, you know, or fancy car or something like that. Who knows what motivates or doesn't motivate people to not tell their children what's going on. But I would, when we had an up day in the market and we had some individual stocks that did really well, and I was doing screenshots to show Hannah exactly like, hey, this is how much your portfolio is up today. And it was some significant numbers because we had some actually really good growth stocks in there. And so Hannah was doing her part-time job or maybe earning 10, 15 bucks an hour, doing some babysitting gigs. You know, she was out there hustling, doing time for money jobs to make a few $100s. And then one day her stock portfolio may have been up $1,000 or $1,500. And it really sends the message of what compounding and good market movements can do. But, you know, it started very humbly. She had a job at the church working a little babysitting gig for the small groups on Sundays. And she would get checks. She'd get an occasional paycheck. And so she contributed. So she had a vested interest in this. And, you know, it started out slowly. I would put a regular monthly contribution to the account. But over the years, we did get to see that, hey, this small sacrifice that you're making today, this, you know, I could have gone and maybe gone shopping or done something, and instead I've stuck some money in this boring Charles Schwab account that's, you know, just sitting there, I can't really see or know. But that's how it got started and grew into what's going to carry her through college.
And it was extremely reassuring after all of those, you know, little checks that I'd put into it. I was like, I'd hand it over, just take it. Don't even let me see you take it. By graduation time, because then I saw exactly how tuition would be paid and be divided up. And I was like, I turned to him and I said, I'm so glad that we did this and I don't have to take out any student loans. This is it's like such a calming feeling to know exactly how your finances are going.
And that, to me, that payoff, that like you felt the pain of putting those checks and not getting those checks at the moment. But then to now, you years down the road, be properly situated where you don't have to go into debt. You've got, you know, the cash that you need for deposits for rent and all, you need a couple pieces of furniture and things like that to get set up. There's a lot of things out there that are lurking that don't seem important when you're 13, 14, 15, you know, and 30 bucks could be a lot of money to you at the time. So I'm very proud of her for contributing, and we've kept track of what she's contributed, so I can say this is what you put in and this is what I've put in and this is what it's grown to. And it's really been a good learning experience.
Even one day at my high school, we had a job fair, or kind of a, you know, career fair, where we would go into different rooms for about 20 minutes each and talk to major different careers, like a lawyer or a doctor, or one, and one of them was a financial advisor, and you could pick which ones to sign up for. So I said, oh my gosh, of course I'll choose a financial advisor. And it was definitely more designed for just learning the basics of, like, what is compound interest? And I walked in and I was like, I got this. And so I was sitting at the front of the class, and the woman teaching the class is even a friend of ours that, you know, lives locally. And so I felt like I was running the class. I said, oh, isn't that when, you know, your money plus interest over time equals, you know, this?
Hannah was busting out the compound interest formula for her.
But then she even put into perspective for me, someone that has been around finance pretty much my whole life just because of my dad, how important it is or how beneficial it can be over the course of a few years and over the course of your lifetime if you put $100 away or anything you can early, and how much that will grow to when you're, you know, 70 even.
Yeah, you saw that growth, it sounds like, in just a couple of short years, the benefit of that saving. And now imagine it over 10, 20, 30, 40 years. That's pretty powerful.
Now that we've gotten here to a point where it's all set up for college, I don't want to spend it all on college. I don't want to blow it all on tuition. I've seen how it can work out for me even longer and even past college to save for weddings and a down payment on a house or a car and just to have as financial security over the course of my life.
Yeah, she's been very good about that. And it's interesting to watch the transformation, say from 16 to now 18, wanting the nicer cars or the, you know, to spend money more frivolously. Now that she's got her own checkbook and she's working, you know, so she's earning and contributing to it. And then we're having to, you know, pull from the account on a monthly basis, but she's done a really good job setting up a budget and is now looking at ways. In fact, she even came to me the other day and wanted to see about getting a different car, not to get a newer, fancier car, but to get a cheaper one that gets better gas mileage so she doesn't have to burn up so much of her cash on gas and transportation.
Yeah, so cool seeing all this wisdom now starting to bubble up and still at such a young age, Hannah. I'm curious we may have a few younger listeners to the show today that are checking this out, or maybe parents or grandparents that want to pass along some of this wisdom to their teens and somebody that may be approaching their college years. Can you share with us perhaps your top three lessons that you've learned about money from Brian or just from your life experiences and kind of what's helped you get to this point in life?
Yes, so definitely the transformation just from 16 to 18 and even 17 to 18, it used to be like, oh, I don't want to give this check. I don't want to put this check in this boring Schwab account. I want to buy this necklace or, you know, go to Chick-fil-A or, you know, spend it on something that would have only benefited me in the moment. So the biggest lesson I can say is save or invest in the same category. Don't spend all your money at once just on something that you think you want. The second one is make a budget and stick to it. I've learned this especially now because right now I have a lot more monthly expenses that I have to keep track of personally. So rent, utilities, you know, gym membership, stuff like that. So it really helps to have it all laid out. And also, over the course of this, my senior year of high school, I took a course that was centered around Dave Ramsey's principles of finance, I think his five principles of finance or something. And one of the biggest things that the course focused on was making a budget and sticking to it. And even if you don't have a lot going out, it's nice to see it all organized so you know exactly what's happening with your money and where it's going.
It all seems to circle back to me toward being plugged in, being knowledgeable, not trying to stick your head in the sand about what's happening with your finances, not treating it as a taboo subject and bringing it up, talking about it openly. And not only have you done that in the family, but now it seems like even internally in your mind, you're having these ongoing discussions and keeping it top of mind and present. And I think that's only going to serve you well throughout the rest of your life. So pretty cool to see that.
I don't remember really if I brought this up on the last podcast I did, but it used to kind of make me nervous to think about money or, you know, exactly how it was going to be spent on tuition, even when I was, you know, 14 or 15. But then after he walked me through my custodial account and when he shows me when the market's up and when the market is down, mm-hmm. It actually makes me feel a lot better to see exactly what's happening than to just stick my head in the sand and say, oh, I it's probably going fine. You can't be ignorant. You have to pay attention to it.
And I think, was that Dave Ramsey class when you were learning how to do tax preparation and what W-2s and income was? Yeah, so that was really a great opportunity because she was bringing home actual tax forms that they had them fill out. You know, just a basic 1040 EZ and if you had a W-2 and all that kind of stuff. Well, it was a fantastic opportunity for me to then pull out her actual tax return and say, oh, well, not only do you have, here's your W-2 from, you know, working at the local store, but then you've got some 1099 income because I've got her on the payroll for helping around the office, and you have some capital gains and losses, and you have some dividends and interest income, and here's where all of that goes on your tax return. And it was a nice way that what she was being introduced to in the class, I could now connect to what was really happening with her tax return. So all along, you introduce these concepts, and they're really falling on deaf ears because they don't know what it is. But all I can say is just start showing them, involve them any way you can, even if they don't understand it. Through repetition, almost like Chinese water torture, I'm just going to keep dripping this on you and sit down and talk about it whenever you can grab a moment. And, you know, over that time, it, you know, she's definitely absorbed a lot. And I'm going to argue that she's leagues ahead of her peers as far as financial preparation, understanding, and knowing how to invest for the long term, and you know, making the sacrifice for a long term potential goal.
Yeah, when I fully moved to Athens and then I started working at the jiu-jitsu school, he said, "Hey, I need you to fill out this W-2 and get it back to me." And when I saw it, it felt like, because I had seen this so many homework sheets of W-2s to fill out with, you know, different scenarios, like Susan has two kids and this much income, I was handed it and I wasn't freaking out like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do with this, because that's how it had been previously. I would just hand it to my dad, he'd fill it out and I'd bring it back. But then I could actually look at this. There were some details that he had to fill out just because he's more in the know on some things than I am, but I could read through it and understand it. So that was the biggest takeaway from that course that I'm really glad that I took over the last year.
Yeah, and this isn't something that you're just going to grasp all at one time, but the earlier you start and the more often you expose them, I just think there's a great opportunity and lesson that could be had to teach people about money while you have it, while you're alive, whether it's kids or grandkids. I've had some clients, in fact, get young grandchildren, bring them into the office, open them up a custodial account, give them, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever the number is, let them pick some stocks. They know the video game companies, they know what fast food restaurants they like, and it really helps them understand, you know, all these companies and brands that are out there that you can actually own and be a part of those. And then they can see, you know, which ones do well over time, and they come in and they squirrel around a little bit and they don't really know what's going on. But a few years in, they're engaged. And that's an age where they're not necessarily looking for, you know, I could add to my wardrobe. I suppose they could want more video games or more tennis shoes or something like that. But when a grandparent puts money into an account and the child gets to be involved in the investment selection process, yeah, they're not getting the whole grasp of it the first time. But again, over time and through repetition, if you will take the time and engage your, you know, heirs, whether it's children or grandchildren, great-grandchildren, it is a tremendous opportunity to teach them, make them financially literate, give them some long-term sense of control and mastery over this topic. And when I look back, I mean, I had a paper route when I was 12 years old. I scurried around and made a few bucks a week. And they, back then, they would let minors open checking accounts. Now it has to be a custodial account, I think, until they're 16 in some cases, 18 in others. But I had this checkbook it turned me loose with when I was like 12 or 13 years old. And I had no idea how it, you know, really, I mean, kind of understood how it worked, but not really. And I didn't know how to balance it. I just kind of sort of hoped there was enough money in there to cover what I was paying for. And my grandfather sat me down and we went through every check and every entry and balanced and reconciled it. We found a bank error. And from that point on, man, I knew how to balance a checking account. I would balance it to the penny. And it was a great discipline you know, you start out, you screw it up a little bit, somebody steps in, shows you how it's actually done. But even if the process is messy, just do it. And good things will eventually come out of it.
Yeah. Don't be afraid to ask questions too. It seems like, Candy, you've done that well over the years and continue to have that heart and spirit. So I mean, when you run into something you don't know, ask a question and you'll know soon enough. So all good stuff there.
Over the last year, it's been mostly my dad and I going to jiu-jitsu. So we would talk a lot about finance and other, you know, taboo topics for an hour drive there during training some, then at dinner, and then an hour drive back home. So, and a lot of times I would have a question and sometimes I'd feel like it's stupid. Like, look, I still don't understand how stocks work. How does that work? Because it's not, I thought it wasn't real money. And then he would walk me through it. So yeah, it's just, he would make me feel comfortable enough to ask the questions and not say, how do you not understand this?
I remember that conversation and she was having a hard time grasping unrealized gains. So you invest in something, and she was like, well, the money's not really there, is it? I'm like, oh, no, it's there. But it changes every day when the market's open. It goes up, it goes down. But in the case that it goes up, well, it's not really there. How do you spend it? I remember this. And I said, well, then you would sell the stock. The cash would end up in your account, and then you could go spend the cash. And so, yeah, it's just sometimes explaining things in its most basic, plain English, simple terms, and you know, realize that you may have dealt with this for, you know, decades, having had income and careers and 401ks and savings and investments and stock plans, and you absorbed all this information over a long period of time. Do the same thing to give your children a head start. And
I think the concept for parents and grandparents to remember is you wouldn't give a toddler steak. So it just keep explaining. And my sister babysat for a kid that would always ask, why? But I think that's good to ask, because then you really get to why. You get to the reason, the root, and then you actually do understand it better. So I think for kids, don't be afraid to ask. And for parents, don't be afraid to answer. Yeah.
Yeah. In simple terms and over. Yes. Until they get it. So yeah.
If it makes you feel better, Hannah, I still call my mom and ask her HR related questions. she was an HR manager, so I'll still call her with like health insurance plan information questions and things like that. Like, okay, I think I've got it, but there's this one thing in the healthcare plan as I'm trying to, you know, figure this out. What does this mean over here? So, the asking why and the questions, they won't go away. They'll be there for a while. So,
I think even just a few days ago, I had to call him and say, hey, I was trying to write a check for tuition or rent or something, and it tore off the page. I couldn't. So what do I do?
He said, can I still give it? Will it work?
Yeah. Well, he said, just write void and then rip it up into 1,000 little pieces. And I said, okay, are you sure? Because like, I, you know, like it had never happened to me before, but just stuff like that, just having to call and ask.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And so it's interesting, Walter. So much of the current payments, like there's Venmo and PayPal, and there's all these electronic things, but all of those apps still connect back to a checking account or something like that. So, you know, really getting people to understand how a basic investment and basic checking account works is still the cornerstone of a financially literate future.
Yeah, if only everybody could have Brian as a dad and get that extra help at the beginning of their kind of financial lives. I think that we as a country, we'd be in a much better place. And it's pretty cool what you've been able to do and help out with Brian in that role, and others out there who have tried to impart that financial wisdom to give their kids and loved ones a leg up in life. It goes a long way, and it's incredibly helpful, I'm sure.
Do you even know how many times I've thought that? I thought, man, if everyone had a Brian Doe dad, then everything would just be so much better.
Brian, she's just raking in those sponsorship dollars.
I don't know if she's about to hit me up for a Starbucks here or what's going on, man.
No, I'm serious. I've genuinely thought that if everybody had a dad, or just a dad that would spend the time and make their kid proficient, or at least introduce them to what their career is, how much better the world would be and how much smarter people would be.
Yeah, there's just a record amount of student debt out there, people who have no idea what course they were on, what was the payback for the degree that they were spending money on, use of credit cards, car loans to buy cars. And I really feel like you've got a good sense of not wanting to go into debt, having a cushion to make you more comfortable. And she's definitely got some responsibility around it. And that can go both ways. Obviously, handing an 18-year-old, I just haven't totally turned her loose with the Schwab account. I'm very much monitoring and involved and engaged with what's going out, what's due, what has to be paid, and not just saying, here's your Schwab account. Best of luck to you, because that could go very wrong too with maybe an 18-year-old boy in particular. Huh? I'm doing well having sensible girls.
I think the biggest thing, or my biggest takeaway from the Dave Ramsey course, was not to get into debt and to stay out of debt. Or if you are in debt, get out of debt as fast as you possibly can. And so I really internalized that. And then I started, any cash I had, I would just save and make my, my mattress money, just to have an emergency savings for whatever might happen. And I fear debt. Like, I fear more than death. I think that just sounds so scary, and hearing that, just to hear how much debt our country is in. And then I even hear some people say, what even is national debt? Who do we owe the money to? It's like, I really don't think you understand national debt, Ben.
You owe it. Basically, yeah. You owe it. As a taxpaying citizen, a portion of that is yours.
Yeah, crazy to think about. Well, great episode. We got to let you guys go because school's about to start. So get ready,
indeed,
Hannah.
Indeed. back to the trenches.
Back to the grind.
Back to the grind. That's right. Well, good luck in your first semester in college, Hannah. We look forward to a future report on an episode, maybe over the summer, perhaps. We'll get you back and see how the first year of school went or something along those lines. And you guys have a safe rest of your trip out to perform drop-off and set up. And can't wait to hear about all your successes here in the future.
Thanks, Walt.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Brian, thank you for being such a great dad. We'll laud a little bit more praise your direction.
Go on. Tell me more, Walter. Tell me more.
Oh, it's good stuff. I know we didn't focus on all the big retirement planning stuff today, but if you're a regular listener to our show, you know the deal. If you want to talk about your financial future, but you're not sure where to start, hey, kind of a similar problem to Hannah and people her age, wondering, how do I begin? Where do I start? Well, you face that dilemma all over again when you get to retirement. And so if you're wondering, where do you start that process? How can you take better control of your finances so that you can have a successful retirement? All you have to do is get in touch with Brian Doe, certified financial planner professional, where he meets the highest standards of training, ethics, always putting your best interests first, more than 20 years of experience. Take advantage of a 15-minute call with Brian to get clarity around some of those financial goals that you have and prepare for a secure tomorrow. Don't miss the opportunity to book a call. You can go to livingworth.com and click that button, book a call, or you can dial directly 706-451-9800. And again, online at livingworth.com. For Brian and Hannah, I'm Walter. We'll talk to you next time right back here on Make the Dough Rise.
Make the Dough Rise is brought to you by Living Worth Wealth Advisors, with a central office in Greensboro, Georgia, but serving the Lake Country and beyond. The podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all your favorite podcasting apps. Subscribe today and never miss an episode. Just search for Make the Dough Rise with Brian Doe. You can also visit makethedoughrise.com to listen to recent episodes. If you'd like to contact the show or schedule a complimentary financial review with Brian and the team, just go to makethedoughrise.com and get in touch through the website, or call 706-451-9800. Thanks for listening to Make the Dough Rise.
Investment advisory services offered through Main Street Financial Solutions, LLC. Information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment, tax, or legal advice. Information is obtained from sources that are deemed to be reliable, but their accurateness and completeness cannot be guaranteed.